strive for compliance with U.S. laws regarding the importation of plant and animal products. In a worst-case scenario, then we will go ahead and enforce U.S. agricultural laws.
Dalton Cash Border Station has its first ever agricultural specialist. So what does that mean for international travelers? It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That story and more up next. 33 sacred Tlingit artifacts are back in Southeast Alaska after spending nearly 150 years at a museum in Massachusetts. The objects include masks, rattles, tools, pipes, and a wooden warrior's helmet collected during the 1860s by Edward Fast, a U.S. Army lieutenant stationed in Sitka. Fast later sold the artifacts to the Peabody Museum at Harvard University. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute President Rosita Worrell says most were used by shaman during healing ceremonies.
You know, a clan will go to a shaman and say, we have an ill person, and the shaman would have a ceremony. And usually they would use their shamanic objects and drums and rattles, you know, to beckon the spirits to come and heal the person.
Sea Alaska Corporation obtained the objects under the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. Many of them originated in Yakutat and were repatriated on behalf of the Yakutat Tlingit tribe. Roll says the tribe may let the Heritage Institute hold on to the artifacts until they have the facilities to care for them.
If the tribe or the clan wants us to care for the objects, then we will sign a memorandum of agreement whereby, you know, they give us that authority.
The objects arrived in Juneau earlier this month. Roll says Sea Alaska got a grant from the Interior Department to cover shipping costs. None of the artifacts in this shipment were traced back to the Chilkat Valley or Skagway area, but other pieces have recently been returned to Klukwan through the same repatriation act. Those artifacts will eventually be displayed at a museum in the village's new Chilkat Kwan Cultural Heritage Center, along with the Whale House collection and the Frog House totems currently in the State Museum. Dalton Cash Port of Entry for U.S. Customs and Border Protection has its first agricultural specialist. The job of this latest full-time addition to border staff is to explain and enforce the agricultural regulations that come from government agencies like USDA, FDA, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Mark Blanchard is the port director at Dalton Cash. He says the office has been trying to fill the position for several years now.
The position was actually created, it's just we've had difficulty filling it. The agricultural specialists tend to have quite a resume for education, so it's difficult to hire these people. But in the past, our officers have enforced the agricultural regulations.
And Melanie Silver, Dalton Cash's most recent hire, does have quite a list of credentials.
Her name's Melanie Silver. And she was born in Orange County, California. She attended and received a Bachelor's of Science degree at Cal Poly, and she received her Master's degree at the University of Kentucky in Biochemistry. And she's our new Agricultural Specialist. And she's coming to us from Otay Mesa Port of Entry in California, which is a huge port of entry, where for 2.5 years she worked at the commercial entry part of the port, processing, examining, inspecting fruits, meats, flowers, that sort of thing.
Skagway already has an agricultural specialist. His name is Thomas Keough, and he taught science at Klukwan School in 2003 and 2004. Juneau, Alcan, and Ketchikan ports of entry also have the position filled, but Dalton Cash, 13 miles from Mosquito Lake and 40 miles from Haines, has never had one before.
Well, I think since 9/11, the concern over possible bioterrorism has certainly increased interest and concern. So I would say that would probably be the driving force of necessitating an agricultural specialist at all the ports of entry.
The federal government also sees a need for Aggies, as they're sometimes called, since crops and livestock could be harmed by imported pests or diseases.
This may seem far-fetched, but somebody possibly bringing a orange from Canada across the border here at Dalton Cash. The orange could come from anywhere, South America or South Africa. They get on the ferry, they get off in Washington, they travel to California. That citrus fruit has a pest in it, and it could it literally, it may sound far-fetched, but it's not, could do millions and millions of dollars of damage to the citrus crops in California. Just that one piece of fruit.
For the ports of entry closest to Cluckwan, Skagway, and Haines, most of the agricultural enforcement work that U.S. Customs and Border Protection does involves making sure that the personal use agricultural commodities fit government regulations.
Basically, our job here and the job of agricultural specialist Silver is to educate the public on what they can and can't bring across the border. We strive for compliance with U.S. laws regarding the importation of plant and animal products. And in worst-case scenario, then we will go ahead and enforce U.S. agricultural laws. The big thing that we see a lot of is citrus fruits, and fruits and vegetables mainly is the big problem. If we cannot make a determination of where that fruit or vegetable came from, a marking or a seal or something of country of origin, it's likely to be lost.
Besides fruits and vegetables, U.S. Customs regulates transport of plants, soil, firewood, meat, and other animal products. These items are generally allowed if they follow guidelines about packaging and use. But since those guidelines change often, and they can be confusing, Blanchard suggests calling the station before transporting anything questionable. The Dalton Cash office also provides printed copies of the most useful rules.
I would say in the last several years, we've really been concentrating on agricultural commodities coming across the border. And initially when we started this, it created quite a bit of confusion. But over the last several years, the public's become very well educated on what they can bring and what they can't, which has made our job much easier. However, I would like to say that commodities that can and can't come across the border, it changes all the time. So my advice is before you plan a trip to Canada, go shopping, or if you plan on bringing back agricultural things, is just to call the port and talk to Melanie or one of the other officers, and they will inform you what is allowed and not allowed at that time.
The addition of Specialist Silver does not bring with it any new agricultural regulations, but Blanchard says it'll make those policies more clear to international travelers.
The only thing that's going to change, which is for the better, is when we would get questions about what can and can't come across, a lot of times we would have to, you know, call the experts. And it could take us, if we couldn't get hold of somebody, it could take us a day, maybe 2 or 3 days to get back to the people in town to tell them that they couldn't bring this across. So it was an inconvenience for those people. With a specialist here, she'll be able to answer their questions immediately. We're consider ourselves very lucky to have her here. We're looking forward to her being here, and I hope the public makes good use of her.
In other border news, the Skagway U.S. and Canada border stations expand hours of operation, beginning at midnight on March 31st. Until the end of October, the Skagway border stations will be open 24 hours each day. However, Dalton Cash and nearby Canada Customs keep the same hours year-round, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Alaska time. At the beginning of April, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium celebrates 5 years of tobacco-free campuses and invites the public to free cake in Haines and Cluckwan.
April 1st is not a joke, actually.
Andrea Thomas is Search's tobacco grant manager.
That's the day that all of Search's campuses went smoke-free in 2005, and so we're celebrating our five-year anniversary. And initially, actually, the village clinics went smoke-free a year before all Search campuses went smoke-free. So it's been something that's important for Search for a very long time.
Search's tobacco quit programs have been active in the area since, enrolling more than 1,500 residents southeast-wide in the quit program.
Alaska Natives have a very high incidence of tobacco use, and so it's a real priority for us to help people quit and to also build the community norms for smoke-free living. So we do a lot of education around all of Southeast Alaska, and I know that Haines has really seen a lot of media with a lot of local people in those ads, and that's something that we find is really important. We provide tobacco cessation services throughout Southeast Alaska for for people who would like to quit. And I think providing tobacco cessation, as well as educating community members all through Southeast Alaska about the dangers of secondhand smoke, has really helped people change how they do things.
Haines voters chose last fall to outlaw smoking in public places and private clubs, but it's only been in effect for the last 2.5 months. In the 5 years that Search has been smoke-free, Thomas says more than 100 of their employees have quit smoking.
A lot of businesses have voluntarily gone smoke-free. Communities have passed ordinances. And in addition, a lot of people have just decided to take their homes and cars smoke-free. And we've seen this trend in increased knowledge and changing of people's behaviors over these years, and it is really awesome.
Free cake will be served as part of the 5-year anniversary of smoke-free Search campuses on Thursday, April 1st at Kluckwan and Haines Clinics. Reporting for KHNS, this is Tara Bicknell. You can listen to KHNS News anytime you want, online at khns.org. Just click on the Listen tab for stories from the last week, or go to Archives for earlier stories.